The Volume.
This is Prime Cuts, the best of the Colin Cowherd podcast. This week we have Marcus Thompson of The Athletic. He's great, talking about why a Ben Simmons trade to the Warriors makes sense for both teams. Nick Wright, his take on why Zion could end up in New York sooner rather than later, even if he does sign an extension with the Pelicans. Tom Verducci, SI Fox Sports, on baseball's sticky stuff controversy. And as the Mavericks are making big organizational changes, we revisit my interview with Mark Cuban from a few months ago, where he talks about what he learned from Dirk and the mistakes he won't make with Luka. Interesting stuff in hindsight. But first, my top takes of the week.
You know, people are bagging on Ben Simmons, justifiably so, because he can't shoot. That's sort of a problem. It is called basketball, not pasketball. You got to put it in the hoop. It doesn't mean, though, Ben Simmons can't still be a force in this league. Seriously. You know, there's a word out there that if you're about my age, you probably never even heard of until the 90s or early 2000s. In fact, it wasn't used until like the mid 80s. The word was repurpose. And basically, it means find a new purpose for something that's different from its original use. And I like what it implies. Like, nothing is ever useless. Just find another use, sometimes a better use for it. I mean, in sports, Julian Edelman was a quarterback until Belichick made him a wide receiver. He repurposed him. Dennis Eckersley, remember him? Burned out, done with the Cubs. Manager Tony La Russa brought him to the A's, moved him to the bullpen. He's one of the greatest examples. He was repurposed. I mean, how many times have you seen an old car tire as a kid's tire swing? A lot of times we blame the player for not succeeding. And sometimes it is the player's fault. But every player needs a coach or a GM and a direction. And for most guys, they come in as raw prospects. I mean, Ben Simmons is only 24. And even that's misleading because he barely played any college basketball. I mean, more people have probably seen Bigfoot than saw him play for LSU. He missed his first entire season with an injury. So the guy's basically 3 or 4 years into his career. Well, I mean, Trae Young, many people thought DeAndre Ayton, Trae Young a year in were just not going to work. So Ben Simmons isn't done at all. He needs to be repurposed as a point forward or the Golden State Warriors big who can run the floor. There's a lot he can do. What he can't do is be relied on to hit jumpers. But repurpose him. Do a Dennis Eckersley. Something else on my mind. Tom Brady was on a show uninterrupted with Maverick Carter, LeBron James. It's the kind of LeBron-Purdue show. And Brady was one of the guests this week. And it made news because he took a shot, many believe, at Jimmy Garoppolo. Brady was recounting when he left New England. One of the teams in the end that wasn't interested in him, he didn't say who it was. Many perceive it to be the Niners. He said, you know, late in the process, one of the teams wasn't interested in me. And I thought, you like that, mother effer? And the perception again is Jimmy Garoppolo. The truth is, the market was really small for Tom. There was about 4 teams that really wanted him. I was told the Chargers really wanted him. I know they did. That has been confirmed. And I know Tampa really wanted him. And the Colts kicked the tires. But let's not do revisionist history here. Tampa was the perfect spot for Tom. And he really chose that. Because what they needed was a right tackle and probably needed a little more of a running game. But Brady wouldn't be nearly successful in a lot of these other places. When he signed with Tampa, what was our first takeaway? God, all that's missing is a quarterback. If you put him on Philadelphia right now, if you put him on half this league's rosters, Tom would not have had the success. Tom's smartest strength, much like Peyton Manning going to Denver, he saw himself as a missing piece. I mean, we said when Tom went to Tampa, shit, man, look at those wide receivers. Look at those tight ends. All they need is a right tackle. We knew their defense was good with Todd Bowles because the previous year before Tom got there, if you remember post-Thanksgiving, the Buccaneers' defense ranked number 1 in the NFL. So the credit goes to Tom Brady scouting the Buccaneers before he landed there. But Tom isn't the kind of athlete at this point where you put him behind a bad O-line with average receivers. I mean, you really think he's going to change the Titans significantly? No. So it's almost like presidents never get credit for the crisis they avoid, you know? And there's a lot of little details presidents make and decisions, and they avoid economic disasters. You never get credit for the mistakes you avoid. You know, Brady gets credit for revitalizing his career, but his greatest asset was his knowledge of football and going to the right spot for him. You had an old Drew Brees rebuilding Carolina, up and down, hot and cold Atlanta. Tampa had the best offensive talent in the division. And we can argue now they had the best defensive talent in the division as well. Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl in Denver. He went to the place, a winnable division, pre-Mahomes. Phillip Rivers was aging. Raiders were the Raiders. And he went to a really good defense, and they had a nice offensive line. So that's the strength of Manning and Brady. The dudes know personnel, and they went to spots that could protect them and elevate them as they could no longer carry a football team. I just finished watching the Sixers debacle against Atlanta. Never has a team had this much talent and been so hard to watch at the end of a basketball game than the Sixers. But, you know, I'll say something I said during the week on television, is that sometimes you need a really bad fight to realize it's time to get a divorce. And you really needed that ending and this series for the Embiid-Simmons relationship to break. It just doesn't work. Simmons can't be on the floor. You know, Embiid can't stay healthy and is a bit of a turnover mess sometimes at the end of games in the half court set. It doesn't work, but they're so talented that you'll keep talking yourself into it. I compare it to a Hollywood relationship. Oh, they're both beautiful. Oh, their careers are on fire. How does this marriage not work? Well, probably because, you know, they don't sacrifice or they're not committed to each other. And I feel like with Embiid and Simmons, it's just two ships passing in the night. Neither game works for the other. They don't like each other. It's well documented during the All-Star game. Both made the All-Star game. They wouldn't fly together on a private jet. They don't like each other. The games don't fit. The personalities don't fit. But they're so gifted that you talk yourself into keeping them together for years and years. You needed this. You needed to lose to a marginally talented Atlanta team. You needed to look ugly at the end of games. It's just a basketball team that situationally, when you have to take Ben Simmons off the floor, you know, Seth Curry becomes far more valuable than Ben Simmons at the end of games, especially if you're trailing by a few points. So, you know, I watch the Sixers and I think, hey, we had to break this thing up. This was not a championship team. Championship talent, but not championship chemistry. And Doc Rivers will take a ton of heat for it because whenever a team loses games close, the coach takes the hit. You know, people killing Quinn Snyder because he didn't go small in the series against the Clippers ever. But the reality is his best player is Donovan Mitchell, and he was playing at about 80%. Well, so Mike Conley's not healthy. Donovan Mitchell's hurt. You're not going to beat a Clipper team, even with Kawhi Leonard out. Paul George was virtually unguardable. Utah doesn't have the personnel. So we tend to blame these coaches, and they're certainly imperfect. But the Philadelphia situation, how many coaches are we going to fire before we realize Simmons and Embiid, talented, it's a bad marriage. On the court, off the court, it just doesn't work. And you needed to lose this series, and the way they lost it was perfect. Ugly, more talent, had leads, and little young Trae Young carries the Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals. All right, let's bring in my friend Marcus Thompson Berry, a columnist for The Athletic. He's written books on KD and about Steph Curry. Steph Curry Golden was the first time that I knew a lot about Marcus Thompson. I think he's so connected. He's got a great way of seeing the NBA, and we'd love to have him in the volume. We just can't afford him. Shit, guy is expensive. That's all I know.
You know what I'm saying? It's about time I've been expensive in my life. You know how many times I've doled myself out for $5 in a pack of annihilators? You know?
So I'm watching that Sixers stuff. By the way, as one of the guys on the staff said, Kevin Huerter has never not been underestimated on any NBA floor he's ever entered. Kevin Huerter and Trae Young oust Ben Simmons. I mean, let's cut to the chase here. I said this on the herd this week. this is how it had to end for the Sixers. Because we keep talking ourselves into this, Marcus, because they're so talented, and Embiid and Simmons, that we just keep talking ourselves into it's going to work. It had to end this way, in my opinion. It had to be ugly. They had to lose leads. We had to go, oh, shit, this just doesn't work. We can't keep firing coaches on this stuff.
It's like a bad breakup, right? Like, you need that real fight so you can be like, yo, we don't need to be together. I mean, it doesn't get worse than losing to Kevin Herter, right? How do you lose three times on your own floor? It's unbelievable that this team wasn't able to at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals in this year. This year, you don't have to face Brooklyn, right? You kind of got a cakewalk to the finals. It's over. It's done. Nope, now we know it. You did it in front of Allen Iverson. That's what really hurts my heart. Allen Iverson had to sit there and watch that. You know, he dragged Aaron McKee and Eric Snow to the finals, and these dudes got the better roster and lose it to the 5 seed. I mean, pray for Allen Iverson tonight, because this is hurting his heart.
Well, a better roster. I mean this. Atlanta, and I say this with all due respect, that is one of the weakest rosters I've ever seen get to a conference final. And I love Trae Young, but think about this, Marcus. They got to an Eastern Conference final, not only on the road, Trae Young had his worst shooting night in the playoffs. I mean, the fact that that happened, I mean, one thing if Trae Young shot 17 to 26 and you're like, we lost, we give up, the Wiz kid. Shit, he played poorly for all but about the last 4 minutes.
That's how you beat Philly, right? Stay close. They're going to fall apart. So look, they tricked me a little bit. I must admit. When Embiid totally wet the bed, it was a Game 5 in Philly, and it was like, oh, he was hurt. And I'm like, this team they don't have the clutch gene. Like, they don't have it. You don't come back from that. Then they do it. Then they go ahead and win Game 6, and it's like, all right, maybe this thing is settled. But no. You know what happened in Game 6? They didn't get down to the end. It didn't come down to, we got to make plays over and over and over again in the crunch. And it happened again tonight, so Trey was terrible. And then the game was close because Kevin Herter wouldn't stop hurting him. And next thing you know, now Philly's got to make plays. And they don't have the gene. They don't have the gene.
Nope.
Joel Embiid does not have the gene. Ben Simmons, he doesn't even have the chemistry set to discover the gene. Tobias Harris was bad. They don't have the player. Meanwhile, Trae Young, three for Sunday, is making all kind of plays when they matter. This you got to break this up.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great. FanDuel's offering users the chance to play free. No deposit required. Plus, for those folks who want to deposit, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. It's sweet. Why do you play on FanDuel? Well, the FanDuel Fantasy is an easy, easy to use app. You pick a new team every game. You compete for top cash payouts. Compete against your buddies in head-to-head matchups. For new users, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Just go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd. That's it. FanDuel.com/Cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/Cowherd. They know we sent you there. FanDuel, just more ways to win. So you're a sports fan, right? That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app, free, recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can, 1, see the latest picks and articles from the Action Network gambling experts, 2, compare odds from different sports books, and 3, track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter. Do you remember, Marcus, DeAndre Ayton's first year? He was a little lost at times.
Very lost.
There were people saying he was a bust. I mean, there were people that were out on, because he was a dominant college player at Arizona. And I remember hearing people, like scouts, they're like, I don't know, he's lost. And by the way, this is where a Chris Paul is so great. He can cinch everything together. He's so smart. But, you know, what I like about them? Everybody always talks about positionless basketball because LeBron's the Swiss Army knife and Kevin Durant can do everything. But they're actually constructed like an 80s team. True point guard with a legitimate backup. So Chris Paul only has to play 31 minutes. Two athletic wings, one old, Crowder, one young. A rim protector who can move. And then they have bench players. And they have a star guard. If you look at how they're built, it's not positionless. Everybody's got a defined role. And for me, as a fan, I like watching them play. It feels almost like 80s and 90s basketball. They're not positionless. They all have it. They know exactly what they do and who they are.
And the beauty of it is they can switch up the style of play. For me, what makes them so appealing is the diversity. Like they can go half court. They can walk you down and mid-range you to death. Yep. Right. Or they could go small and just run. They got horses like Bridges and Booker. Ayton is not slow. They can play that way. They like, you know, styles make fights, right? They can contrast however you want to play. It's exciting to watch. They've got you're right. They're much more like the Barkley Suns, right? Than the 76ers or less Nash Suns, right? They're like just how they're set up. It is a very traditional, even like the sizes, right? They don't have a player who's too small or too big for his position, right? Like everybody's like the height they're supposed to be, which is
weird. The backcourt's perfect. So I have this distribution first veteran point guard who can score, but he's a throwback. He plays defense, he yells at people, and he hits mid-range. He's like an 80s guard. But we all know that Devin Booker's the true scoring guard. So that's a perfect backcourt.
And he's like 6'5", right? Like, he's not little. Yeah.
And then you have a backup to the veteran point who can spell him for about 12 minutes a game. So, like, if you go back to the 80s and in like the Laker teams, there was the Norm Nixon. There was the Byron Scott. There was the Magic. There was the Cooper. You always had this role. And they all had roles. Cooper played defense. Magic distributes. Nixon could shoot. Like, you know, the whole positionless thing, I nothing against it. But, yeah, that's because LeBron and KD can do everything. But most players do one or two things exceptionally well. Like, everybody's trying to make Giannis a three-point shooter. Cut that shit out. He's a big. Like, he is – within 6 feet, he's unstoppable. Outside of it, let him shoot. Like, let guys do what they do.
Pay him to shoot, right? Like, he's pulling up with 20 seconds of the shot clock. Like, please, would you stop that? And that's, you know, Ayton, right? You don't see him dancing on the perimeter.
Nope.
Trying to chuck threes. Trying to – like, he's like, yo, I'm 6'11". And I'm a beast, so you about to get this work. So there's – and look, Monty Williams is an old-school guy, right? So, you know, they're getting a bit of that feel and that vibe. It's that is a very unique take. They are old. They're an old-school team. This is like a Afro and butterfly collar type team. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had throwback. It's like 80s night, 70s night. In Phoenix every night. Like, and the crowd is even throwback, right? Like, they got the Rockets situation going. They're fighting in the crowd like a Raiders game. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, this is actually a good throwback team. And look, they got the two best mid-range shooters in the game. And Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Like, they are literally killing teams with jabs and body blows, right? Like, just all game long. Like, this is throwback. Kevin Johnson will be proud.
You're incredibly tied in not only to the NBA but the Warriors. And you start looking at the Ben Simmons situation. There have been a lot of rumors about, you know, Simmons could fit Golden State. They don't need his shooting. They need his defense. Yeah. They need his size because they can get small and they could ship like Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins, multiple picks. Do you buy that Simmons Warriors rumor at all?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're into Simmons that much. I think there's a split. There are some people who are like, man, give me that much talent, I'll make it work. But I think the Draymond problem is a big concern. They already have a guy who's kind of like that, right? But Draymond is like a little bit, or not a little bit, he's definitely more aggressive offensively. But he doesn't stick to three. You don't have to guard him like that. So I think they're concerned about putting two of those guys together. I don't know if they pull the trigger, but at this point, look, Colin, the price ain't what it used to be. So it might be like, yo, I got this Mercedes for you for $500. It's like, who wouldn't take it, right? At some point.
Right.
Right. Like, it's like, yo, I mean.
No, I talked about this the other day. I said, Embiid, once a big gets hurt, you better move him early. He's just going to lose market value every injury. Listen, I love Embiid. He's the closest thing I've seen to Shaq. But I'm not giving you a ton for him. I'm baking in his injuries. I'm just going to say, as a GM, brother, where do you want me to go on this? This is not a 9-year player. This may not be a 4-year player.
Facts, yeah. I'm not. I think the price is dropping. Not just because, like, you got the injuries with Embiid. You got the fact that he just didn't close. And this is not the first time. He didn't close out Atlanta. And wherever he goes, you know he's a guy who's going to want the ball. Ben Simmons' stock way down, right? You can't play him at the end of games. Though I wonder, if he hung out with Clay, would this be an issue? Clay would have him shooting free throws at 80% rate. Hang with Clay is a life solution. Clay right now is swimming in the Bay Area in the literal Bay. Put Ben Simmons with Clay for an offseason. I bet you he shoot 80% from free throw line.
Well, also, Simmons can give you 19 to 22 a game as long as you don't have a dominating big clogging it up. So
that's why he's perfect. You got Clay, you got Steph, you got Draymond, and they're pushing it. He's incredible in transition. Like, you're not asking him to do this. And also, it's not clashing with the big guy who needs to be posted. Unless, you know, somehow Steve Kerr decides that, yo, we're going to turn James Wiseman into Joel Embiid. But I don't think that's happening at all. But I think Simmons is a fit in the sense that he can play the Warriors style and you don't need a shooting. I just wouldn't give up a lot for him after what we just saw. Now it's like, I got some used Air Jordans and, you know what I'm saying, maybe Wiggins, right? Like,
I give Wiggins and Wiseman.
That's a lot. That was the price before. What was the price for James Harden? It was like a pick or...
Okay, how about Wiggins, Wiseman, and you give me your first round pick? I get the Sixers' number one pick, but I'll give you Wiggins, Wiseman.
And Simmons?
I get Simmons.
I'd do that.
Alrighty, my buddy Nick Wright, host, First Things First, FS1's joining us. So, you know what I always think is funny, Nick, is that, and I've watched a lot of people do this to their careers in radio and television. Like, they have a flaw, and they just don't correct it. And, I mean, there's no perfect broadcaster, but they'll some people just don't have a great voice, or they're, you know, whatever, there's a deficiency. But there are people that are really talented, but they keep making the same mistake over and over and over and over. And I think we both know people like that. And like with Ben Simmons, you're like, dude, this is not this difficult. It's a free throw. It's free. It's a free throw. I'm always shocked when the solution is easy. It's not like we're asking him to be quick or add vertical. It's like... it's a free throw. It is unguarded. What do you make of that?
Well, I think I talked to someone close to Ben after game 5 when he said, or whatever, whichever game he said, I was in my own head. It's mental. And the person said, yeah, he shouldn't have said that. Because now that's out there. Now that's in the universe. Now people are talking about it being mental. That the advice was, no, just say you had a bad shooting night. But the thing is this,
right?
It was 100% in his head. It is 100% mental. And that has to be, at least to me, Colin, a massive concern. It's why it's not free. It's why it's not easy. Because he is thinking so hard. And you saw it on the play that Embiid said turned the game, Colin, where he said, well, what turned the game was we could have gotten 2 points and we got 1 point and they scored the next time down. He had a dunk, but he was so afraid of going to the line that he passed the ball and then that's that. Compare that to Giannis, who they're counting 1, 2, 3. He's airballing free throws and he just kept attacking and ended up making 7 in a row in the biggest game of his life.
If my career was only going to be 14 years, and I was tied financially tied to my first job for 4 years. And I didn't even grow up poor. I didn't grow up rich, but I didn't grow up poor. Many professional athletes don't grow up with a ton of money, right? And I got 14 years to make it. And I get drafted by a mess of a franchise that couldn't get Chris Paul or Anthony Davis right. Zion's going to be on his third coach in 3 years. This is where I always side with pro athletes. I would be fucking impossible to deal with. One of the reasons, even if I sign a contract and don't love it, you know, I'll be out in 2.5, 3 years. I can go somewhere else if I was ever unhappy. I don't blame Zion. The Pelicans are a mess. They're owned by a football owner who, by the way, they run a hell of a football operation. They run a real bad basketball operation. There was a story by Tom Haberstroh or somebody that they're probably the most likely relocation franchise. Like, I side with him. Like, what I hope is this, Nick. Players have always had two revenue streams, the stars, shoes and basketball. They now have a third, social media. I think if he goes to a Knicks or a Lakers, he can make the money up in shoes and social media, and it's really not that big of a loss.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think financially he could make it even. The thing is this, what they've got the rookies by financially is the risk. It's he would have to basically take a massive risk for a year, and assuming nothing traumatic injury-wise happens, then by the end of his career, he does probably make the money up. But it is, and Marcus Thompson, who you talked to, I actually heard him make this point. I think, or he was on a podcast where somebody made this point. I think it's a good one, which is part of, you mentioned these guys don't grow, a lot of guys don't grow up with a ton of money, right? And he made the point, there is some social pressure from your peer group of friends at home if it comes out in the public. Like, really? You turned down $150 million. You said no to that. Like, sign the contract. Just go ahead and maybe you just sign to take the money. So I understand that part of it. And I also understand why we've never seen a guy on his rookie contract turn down the max extension. But somebody eventually will. And your point on New Orleans, it would really bother me if I knew my team owner that we are the second most important team they own. Like, what? Like, that would bother me. Like, I don't think I'd love that as a pro athlete. And I also wouldn't love the history. I think New Orleans is an awesome city. I also, you know, previously have said I think David Griffin's a good GM. I don't think he's done I don't think the Stan Van Gundy hire was a great one. We'll see how the moves work. But here's where I think it's going to thread the needle, Colin. And this is where I think NBA guys, the true superstars, really have the leverage. I think guys can sign the contract to lock in the money and then still leave.
Yeah.
Like, we've never seen an NBA team willing to be like, no, you're under – James Harden was under contract for 2 more years. He had one press conference like, I got to get out of here. They traded him in 4 days to the exact place he wanted to go to. So, like, I think Zion and Luka can sign the deals and the team still know it's year to year. Because the moment they really want out, we're going to have to get them out. So I think that's what happens. I think Zion, he's played 2 years for the Pelicans. I would say I think he will play at least 5 years for the Pelicans. Anthony Davis played 7. You know, LeBron played 7. I think he'll play at least 5 and evaluate then. But they got a lot of work to do, man. They got a lot of work to do just to be a second-round playoff team, much less a championship contender.
Well, when there's a baseball topic, I call two people, Bob Costas or Tom Verducci. And since we had Costas, we would have taken Verducci ahead of Bob, obviously. But Tom is joining us, Sports Illustrated senior baseball writer, reporter for Fox Baseball and Major League Baseball, 3-time National Sports Writer of the Year. He is the premier baseball writer, in my opinion, in the last 10, 15 years minimum. And Tom's joining us. So let's get to the sticky stuff controversy, because you've been somebody who's been willing, if you hear stuff that's not necessarily great news for the sport, to be honest about it and up front. You talked very early on the steroids. When did you hear about TAC? Was it last year? Was it around a batting cage? Did you read about it? When did you hear about it?
Well, Colin, you got to go back a few years to find out about the whole suntan lotion and rosin combo that was going on.
Yes.
That was probably, I want to go, you know, even maybe 6-7 years ago, started hearing about that. And if you watch the game, you saw guys playing at night with their arms lathered with suntan lotion, and they're going to it after every pitch, right? So that's when I first realized there's something going on here besides just, you know, grabbing the rosin bag and using some sweat or licking your fingers to put something on the baseball. But it was really in the last, I want to say, 3 to 4 years that you started seeing ridiculous spin rates, because we started tracking those in 2015. So now we had actual data besides what we were watching to say there's something really interesting, if not fishy, going on here. And then after talking to pitchers, pitching coaches and whatnot, you realize that they're now chasing spin rate more than they're chasing velocity. That was mind-blowing concept to me, because we've always been in love with the radar gun, right? The guy throws hard, he's hard to hit. But they figured out that actually spin rate has a greater effect on limiting hitting than velocity. And now, because they have slow, high-speed cameras, they can figure out all the spin rates and how to generate that to maximum purpose. And that's why I started making these combinations of pine tar, Diet Coke, melting pine tar down, all kinds of scientific things going on to maximize spin rates. And I say this is going on, Colin. This has been going on even in the minor leagues, systematically in organizations. So I would say the last 2 to 3 years is when I started hearing that this had jumped really from maybe a few guys to something that was industry-wide.
So after the Astros scandal, and of course the steroid scandal predated that, it's pretty obvious that baseball, once this started getting talked about in mainstream media, they jumped on it. You love to figure this out in the offseason. It looks aesthetically pretty choppy to frisk guys during a game. The optics are not great. The other day I said I compared it to the NFL catch rule, where guys made catches, they'd go to super slow-mo, the ball would move a little in the elbow crease, and you'd say no catch. It looked really bad. It's obviously a catch. And Roger Goodell had come on my radio show and acknowledged it's bad television. It looks bad. So is it fair to say Manfred was, if you knew about it 3 years ago, other players knew about it probably 3.5 years ago, was baseball reticent to get involved, slow? Because it kind of feels like now they're being reactive in the middle of a season, and kind of it's clunky as they make it up as they go.
Right. But I think you have to rewind the tape here, because go back to preseason 2020, when MLB really did know that there was a lot more than just a few guys doing something with baseball. So they sent out a memo. It was Chris Young at the time, vice president of baseball operations for MLB, to all the clubs, addressed to all the managers and general managers, essentially saying, knock it off. Here's the rule that's in the books. And there is a rule that you can't have it on your possession. Obviously, you can't put it on a baseball. It was a warning to the players to knock it off. But there was really no enforcement to it, right? So behavior is not going to change without enforcement.
Right.
Then this year, they sent another memo out. And they said, oh, and we're also going to have monitors down at the field to see that nothing fishy is going on. We are going to take samples of baseballs out of the game and look at what's on them and figure out what you're putting on baseballs. And we're going to monitor your individual spin rate, because it really shouldn't change that much. Not by going up 300, 400, 500 RPMs is what we've seen. That was another case where MLB is trying to get players to change their behavior on their own. And they didn't. So now they went past the warning phase, the evidentiary phase, to finally the enforcement phase. And they gave them a few weeks here to make the adjustment, right? Because the word went out there early in June. They gave 2 or 3 weeks to say, we're not going to start enforcing this, but here's your time now to start cleaning things up and make the adjustment. So I do not buy the argument that this was dropped on the players out of the blue mid-season. Oh my goodness, we can't change. No, you've been warned for 2 years to knock it off. And it's like your kids disciplining them, right? You threaten them with a curfew, but until you actually do it, it doesn't have any effect. So it took now the enforcement phase to start to change behavior. And I agree with you, Colin. It's not a great look. They're trying to do it as unobtrusively as they can, but there's no other way around it. It is obtrusive, but it needs to be done. There's a certain amount of theater to it, sort of like TSA at the airport. It just has to be done. And there's going to be one time where someone's going to be foolish enough to be caught. But it's more about making sure that now there's an enforcement phase to this, and that changes behavior, not just a warning.
All right, Tom, what I'm about to say, you cover baseball intensely, so this is going to sound ridiculous, and I'm You can take shots at me. But what Shohei Ohtani is doing is Babe Ruthian. He throws 100 and leads baseball in homers. Now, throughout the course of my life, there have been athletes, Dave Winfield, who really could have played multiple sports. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain, basketball, multiple sports. We know LeBron was All-State in Ohio as a football player. That's understood. But to throw at 100 and to lead baseball in home runs, that is Ruthian. Give me the players, Tom, since you've covered baseball. I mean, nobody's doing it, but you thought it could get into that sphere in that, because I can't think of anybody.
No, it's zero. First of all, I go back to Bo Jackson when he was playing baseball, right?
All right.
Amazing athlete. There was nobody on the field who looked like Bo Jackson, but I wouldn't say his skill set, you know, as far as high average hitter, was really extraordinary. This is what's amazing about Ohtani. He's a great athlete, and yet his skill set in multiple phases of the game is elite. Elite hitter, elite runner, elite pitcher. We have not seen this since Babe Ruth. This is the most underappreciated story of baseball.
Easily.
And I don't know how long, maybe since Babe Ruth 100 years ago. Let me put this in context for you. This year, Ohtani is hitting the baseball harder than Juan Soto. He is throwing the baseball harder than Walker Buehler. And I mean, it's crazy. And he's running faster than Brett Gardner. So he's doing things on a baseball field that we literally haven't seen in 100 years. And it's amazing.
Mark Cuban's one of those guys that's fascinating. I think Donald Trump opened the door for celebrities to run for president. And I would be a huge fan of Mark Cuban. I don't have to agree with every candidate on every issue. I really don't. That's not how I think. I'm an independent. I go left socially, fiscally right. But I think Cuban would be a fascinating candidate if he put himself out in the fray. And he is joining us now. So, Mark, we've talked a lot of times about different stuff, and we talk sports and business, and I'm a guy that's fascinated with business, and you know a lot more of it than I do. And you always respond to you placate me when I email you with my stupid questions. I'm gonna throw this at you, that I'm a big fan of mobility. It's the only reason I've had success in my life. I have moved for commerce. The NBA, I am a huge proponent of player mobility. I support all players with mobility. Owners can move franchises, GMs, coaches move, players can too. But yet you and Dirk were together 21 years. It's the greatest, longest relationship for any player and a team. Could I make the argument that player mobility, which there's less of in the NFL, is not always a good thing for your sport?
It's great for the summertime ratings. It's more difficult during the season. There's no question about it because, you know, continuity, corporate knowledge is always a good thing for a team. So there's definitely challenges there, and it creates a lot of agita as well. You know, when you have a great player, every team stresses about, and fan base stresses about, you know, will you lose them? And so, you know, the minute you find out somebody's great, you start working really hard to make them successful.
Do you use Dirk's career at all as a template for Luka? What did you learn to do and maybe not to do?
I learned a lot more what not to do, you know, and some things to do. I mean, one of the most important things is I don't think I fully appreciated Dirk while he was playing, you know, because it was all new to me and I was getting into the whole, you know, experience of having a team and enjoying it. And,
right.
You know, it was 20 years ago. And so I don't think I fully register on me just on the excellence I was seeing in front of my eyes for so many years. And I won't make that same mistake with Luka. And in terms of, you know, keeping Luka for the next 21 or actually 25 years, you know, with the way medicine and science is going, you start building those types of relationships now because this is a relationship business. And, you know, I have to understand the goals of every player, and some I can help come true and some I can't. But, you know, the underpinning is winning. It's really hard to leave a team that is doing really well and winning.
From the outside, Mark, they look like different. I'll just throw my opinion out, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. They look like different people. Luka's a little feistier. Luka was greater younger. Luka has perhaps more domestic star appeal. That's what it looks like to me. He's a little more mature early. That's what I see. Is that harder to manage, do you think?
No, it's different simply because, you know, even when I got to the Mavs and Dirk had been a year and a half in Dallas by then, there were still language challenges for Dirk. You know, he German was his first, second and third language, and he had to learn English. He knew some from school, but he wasn't comfortable with it. He wasn't comfortable expressing himself, you know, and because of that, I think he held back, whereas Luka is completely confident. He speaks multiple languages like it's nothing. Spanish, Serbian, Slovenian, English, and maybe every now and then he'll miss a word. But so that allows him to be much more confident than Dirk was. And then just generally, you know, while they both have that same burning desire to be the best, I think Luka and Dirk are similar in that where there's kids, hospitals, people in need, they both are there, right? There's no question. You don't have to ask them. You don't have to force them. They voluntarily want to help. That's a strong similarity. But I do think Luka's just a little bit more outgoing at the same age, you know, and maybe a lot of that has to do with social media. You know, who knows what Dirk would have been like if he had 10 million Instagram followers or, you know, Dirk dancing and was on TikTok. You know, it could be a whole different ballgame, but social media definitely has an impact. Because remember, Luka was a star in Europe and he had a big following there. And so that made a big difference as well.
That wraps it up for the week. We're heading into another big week here at The Volume. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram.